The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 103rd Psalm we hear, Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. We gather once again to continue our work and deal with the challenges that confront us. Bless us, O Lord, so that we follow the path you have set us upon, and to do what is right and necessary with the legislative bill we continue to work to pass. Guide our thoughts and words and our actions this week, so we may truly be seen as your servants, doing what we have been called to do, and being the people we are meant to be. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sader, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the ninth. Senator from the ninth is here. Senator from the fourth. Senator from the fourth is here. A quorum being established, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, second extra session, fourth day, Thursday, June 15th, 2017.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I make my motion, for the benefit of the body, we have five journals to approve today, Mr. President. I would move that further reading of the journal for June 15th be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal from June the 15th be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, would you ask to have the next journal read?
Madam Secretary, please read the next journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, second extra session, fifth day, Thursday, June 22nd, 2017.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal from June 22nd be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal on June the 22nd be dispensed with and same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, second extra session, sixth day, Tuesday, June 27th, 2017.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal on June 27th be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with from June, the journal from June the 27th be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Crowley recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, second extra session, seventh day, Thursday, July 6, 2017. The Senate.
Sharon Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading in the journal from July 6th be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal from July the 6th be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Cole, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate. First regular session, second extra session, eighth day, Friday, July 14th, 2017. The Senate met pursuant.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal for July 14th be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal on July the 14th be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Cole, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, Samantha Kumar from Channel 8 News, KOMU Channel 8 News, Garrett Berquist from KRCG-TV, Matthew Sertivant from KMIZ-TV, and Jason Rosebaum from St. Louis Public Radio have been granted permission to take photos and videos in the Senate chamber today.
So it will be noted in the journal. Introduction of guests. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
The Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Some interesting things have happened since we were last together.
Yes.
One of them has to do with the governor issuing an executive order to create his own prescription drug monitoring program. And I understand that in his announcement, which he held at Express Scripts, he publicly stated that they would be contracting with Express Scripts to do this PDMP.
Yes.
And being a member of your committee on appropriations, I was kind of curious as to how that would work, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the matter. I'm sure you've probably thought about it.
I have, and I was given a heads up the evening before the announcement, but with no plan of exactly how it was going to be carried out or how it was going to be paid for.
Well, does the governor, in your opinion, have the ability to create a new program with the existing money in the budget that we passed in May?
Well, it concerns me because we really haven't seen the balance sheet with the withholds and what's on.
Senator from Barry, you're in violation of Senate rules. Please abide by the Senate rules. Senators, you may proceed.
You know, we don't know exactly the balance sheet, what money is there, and then it concerns me that we start an entirely new program that, as best I understand, will have to be funded by the legislature.
Well, didn't the governor withhold about $30 million from the Medicaid budget line in his withholds?
I think that's correct.
Well, if he withheld $30 million, my understanding was that he said that the $30 million was going to be achieved through savings in the Department of Social Services.
Right.
Did they ever give you any idea how they would save $30 million?
No.
Because
sir.
I thought, you know, sitting on the Appropriations Committee, that the budget was going to be pretty tight as far as, you know, Medicaid goes. And so just being able to cut back by $30 million, but now he's going to actually find,
right,
exclusive of the $30 million, a quarter million for Express Scripts to do their thing.
Right.
So any idea, are you aware of any budget line from which he could take that money and spend it in DHSS?
I am not, and have not been informed on how they plan on coming up with the money.
Okay, well,
I think that's a good question for us to all ask. And, you know, it gets to the point is, why do we have an Appropriations Committee or House Budget Committee if we don't even attempt to follow the template that we work very hard, as you're a member of that committee, trying to get the best bang for our buck in the state of Missouri?
Don't we have to issue an RFP when we do new programs and put out an RFP and have people bid on it and then award the contract to the best?
That is my understanding on any state contracts, and I don't know. I have not heard anything from OA or budget directors. Like I say, I got a heads up from someone out of his office that they were going to announce this program, kind of like a voluntary program or something. But, you know, then you find out there's actually a contract with a particular pharmacy benefit manager. I don't know how this all interfaces with government computers and who is going to monitor that entire program.
Well, he actually had the press conference at Express Scripts, and in the press conference he said that they would contract with Express Scripts. And I mean, this is the first time that it's come up, and there's not been any RFP for this, obviously.
Not that I'm aware of.
Do you have any idea how he can constitutionally get away with that?
No.
I don't either. I understand that he's going to spend $375,000 hiring an attorney and some investigators for the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. That was said. So that would be new money that he would have to take from elsewhere. Can he just take money from one place in the budget and move it over, move the FTE over, and hire investigators and an attorney?
We go to a lot of pains and a lot of time trying to make departments accountable to the taxpayers. And as you well know, we tightened down a lot of flexibility that the governor had built in his budget to where there wasn't that ability or opportunity to move money from one department to another department or to move a personnel around without us knowing about it. You know, that's why we did. The judiciary had 100% flexibility, and we saw some flaws in what they were doing with some of the clerk 1s, 2s, and 3s on the county levels and not getting their pay raises. So we took that on, and so it does concern me. You know, we in Governor Nixon's administration, there were some times that money was used to buy an airplane, to do other things that we were not aware of until after the fact, and we closed those loopholes. The Highway Patrol had a fund of surplus money that had a lot of money in it. We took all that money away so we would know, and they wouldn't have $6 million to go buy an airplane. So, I don't think any governor should do that, you know, without giving us pretty detailed information and where they're getting that money, and if there's that much money available that easily, then we are not doing a very good job budgeting.
Yeah, it seems to me that we might have over-budgeted if he's got an extra $250,000. Were you aware that Express Scripts was one of the contributors to the governor's inaugural committee, and he hasn't disclosed how much money
I was not aware, but I'm not surprised.
I mean, when that happens, I mean, when you've got the governor taking money from Express Scripts and not disclosing how much, and then giving Express Scripts a contract without an RFP, it seems to me to have the air of impropriety. You're the probes chair, but that really raises red flags for me.
Well, I know as serving as a senator or a representative, part of our sworn oath is not to influence these contracts and not to, it happens in Washington a lot. They kind of hide it a little bit, but it gets pretty obvious at times. And it was always my thought that that was not appropriate. I've been very careful about not funding projects in my district, because I don't want that to appear that I'm just here bringing the bacon home, so to speak. I didn't have any budget requests last year that affected my it may have affected my district, some of the things that we've done, but I did not have any pet projects. I think that's what politicians do, and I think most people up here are not politicians.
You know, the governor just last couple, 3 days, announced that he was going to reverse his cut to foster care.
Yes.
You know, and now my understanding was that he offered a budget, or there was originally in the budget, a 3%.
The Senate needs to come to order. The Senate, please come to order so the senators can hear one another in debate. Senator, you may proceed.
There was a 3% increase, and the governor cut that back to 1.5, and then he withheld all the rest of it. Am I correct?
That's how I understand it, yes.
And then he came out and he said, we made a mistake, but my understanding is that he didn't restore it up to just the 1.5. He's planning to restore all 3%. Is that your understanding?
My understanding.
Well, now, if we budgeted in the bill that we would give 1.5%, how can the governor restore 3% when we didn't pass a bill for the 3%? Do you have any figure, any way that you can see that that would be legal?
No, I do not.
So,
and, you know, the explanation has been, well, there's money within the department that they can use. Well, then we're not getting good figures from the department because we shouldn't be leaving that much laying on the table.
Well, what is our recourse as the legislature? I guess if he can just say, we're just going to go ahead and spend this money in spite of the fact that it wasn't appropriated, the only way that anybody could put a stop to that would be to actually take him to court, right?
Well, and we're asking some questions related to this, having some discussions. I think one of the ways that we did that with Governor Nixon is we took some money out of the governor's budget to fund some of the programs that he thought was really important.
Well, doesn't anybody watch over to make sure that when a governor does something that it's constitutional? I mean, we only budgeted 1.5%, and I have to tell you that probably every one of us in this room appreciates foster care parents.
Right.
But
we
for
also
him
appreciate
to do
nursing.
Something just because, yeah. I mean, it's a good, you know, charity, or it's a good,
right.
It's a good thing to spend money on.
Well, so
the Constitution is more important.
So is nursing homes. You know, there's a lot of things that we wanted to do that was withheld, and then certain things were, I didn't mean to do that. Put all the money back in. I don't know if there was a lot of noise in the governor's office from constituents or what happened. I'm not privy to that information, but yeah, I agree with you. It's somewhat disheartening when you work the hours that we work, getting a budget passed and try to answer our colleagues' questions about what we came up with as far as budget numbers and why we're doing what we're doing and why some of their programs that they really like and think do a wonderful job and create jobs get cut, and then our will's not always carried through.
Well, I'm quite worried about this governor's behavior, and I can see that you have some concerns also.
I do.
You know, he unilaterally issued an executive order for maternal benefits for a subset of state employees, and I know that very popular thing.
Right. But I still don't think OA can even get a handle on the cost. And then where does the money come from? You know, if it's really, really important, it may have to come out of some of the departmental budgets.
I'm being told that the senator from the first has an introduction to make, but
okay.
You just go ahead and stand up and request that.
Yep.
I'd like to keep the floor.
Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, insofar as we are on the order of business of introduction of guests, I have an introduction of a guest I would like to make.
You may proceed, Senator. I'm sorry, I didn't know whether Senator from Buchanan was done at the floor. My mistake.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe he does not intend to be done with the floor. I think I'm a third senator standing here for clarification. I think that's his intention.
Senator from Buchanan, you have the floor, correct?
Yes.
All right. So we're with you at this point.
Hearing of the senator from Phelps currently.
I'm breaking
that up.
Senator
Phelps has sat down.
And he's just standing because he's got an introduction that's important to him right now.
All right.
Yeah. Mr. President, seek unanimous consent to introduce.
We have three senators standing. Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have some very special guests to introduce.
So you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you for your hospitality earlier this afternoon as well. With me today are my two very favorite constituents, my son Stephen and my daughter Madeline on my right and your left. If members of the body could please make them feel welcome, I would ask that they be made honorary pages for the day with compensation to be paid by the senator from the 7th.
Let's please welcome the guests of the senator from the 1st to the Senate chamber.
President, be allowed to.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to seek unanimous consent to introduce a very, very special guest.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to my left and to your right, I too have a constituent in the chamber with us today, and that constituent is not only my constituent, he's also the state representative of the 80th District, and that's Peter Meredith. So I would like for you all to join with me in giving him a round of applause for exercising his civic duties today, even though he's not working on the House side.
Will the guests of the Senator from the 5th please rise and be recognized by the Missouri Senate? Senator from Buchanan.
To continue my inquiry.
You may proceed.
So the thing about the Foster cut is that when we passed the budget with a 1.5% increase, for him to go up to 3% is just flat out unconstitutional, isn't it?
Yeah, it's above the legislative intent in the budget.
Well, I mean, it's not only above the intent, it's beyond what we appropriated.
Right. Right.
So,
if we were flush with money, maybe it would be different, but we're not.
But the question is, can the governor increase a line item unilaterally?
I know it can decrease. I don't know about increasing. I think we asked for a Supreme Court decision when Governor Nixon was doing some of those things, and I don't think we ever got that decision.
Okay. Well, Senator, thank you for the inquiry. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay. Senator from Clay, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan? Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Well, Senator, here we are in the special session once again.
We are. Senator, I hope you'll forgive me. I was engaged in another conversation during your inquiry, so I didn't catch any of the ground covered.
That's okay. You were the budget chair in the House, and I wondered if you had a feeling for the governor increasing the line item that we appropriated for foster care from 1.5% to 3% unilaterally.
Yeah, you know, while certainly I think we should have funded it at 3% to begin with, would have been ideal. It would have been ideal had he not recommended we cut it 3% to begin with, because we probably would have just funded it where we funded it last year. But the way that it's played out, you know, the governor recommended a 3% cut. The legislature said we felt that was too steep, that we should do it at 1.5% below where we were last year. And that's where it ended up. So for the governor to now come and say, oh, my bad, it was a mistake, I should put it back to the original 3% that you had last year, is commendable, but probably illegal. But we find ourselves in a situation that it's a good cause, it's politically popular. He has made, you know, a great deal of Facebook videos about inviting foster kids to do various things, so it's on the front of everybody's mind. But that doesn't make it legal.
That doesn't make it right.
Right. I mean, if Governor Nixon would have tried to spend money that he was not given the appropriations authority for, we would all be up in arms, probably regardless of what the issue is.
Well, does not the Constitution require the governor to only spend money that's appropriated?
It does. And what's interesting is, you know, the only explanation I've heard is that, oh, well, we found efficiencies. We found the money to pay for it. Okay, well, that's great. It raises other issues, but it's great that you have the money to pay for it. The problem is you don't have a legal mechanism to pay for it, which is the authority given to you by the legislature, because that's where the constitutional authority resides.
Well, he could amend the special session call right now and have us deal with this appropriately.
That would be the appropriate way to handle it. I think that would be the constitutionally legal way to deal with it.
Well, you know, He took an oath of office just the same as we did to uphold the Constitution. And as far as I can tell, he's not living up to that oath of office.
You know, I think that this is an unconstitutional move, albeit at the end of the day, the right move for these families, not the right way to uphold the Constitution. But the problem is the only recourse we would have is to sue him and ask a judge to decide. And you know, who's going to do that? Who's going to sue over and say foster families shouldn't get that much money, when in reality, we would have probably given it to him in the first place had the governor just asked for it. I mean, we did. We gave it to him last year.
Right. You know, my office received a notice from the governor's office that they're going to go ahead and issue licenses to the two abortion clinics and do the inspections and issue those licenses because of the federal judge's ruling. Well, if the governor's office is going to do that...
Wasn't that the emergency that we were supposed to be here to stop?
Well, it's an extraordinary circumstance that we have to spend a bunch of taxpayer dollars to have this session to pass the bill before us. It's so important. And yet, they're going to go ahead and issue these licenses. How does that grab you? Doesn't that bother you?
Well, it does. I mean, I said from the very beginning, in my opinion, that this was not an extraordinary circumstance, that what we're here to address did not rise to the level of calling an extraordinary session. It was simply something we should... It should have been handled one of two ways. Either one, the governor should have been more engaged during regular session in saying that this is a priority we should get to his desk, because I think we probably would have. Or he should wait till next year and when the Constitution says we're supposed to come back. If the reason that we're here, if what makes it extraordinary is, oh, we've got to stop these two abortion clinics, but he's going to go ahead and issue the licenses, we haven't stopped anything, and now this becomes an even more frivolous session.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about another issue. Today, a couple hours ago, 3 hours ago, whatever, I got served the lawsuit from Missouri Alliance for Freedom, who wants all of my personal communications with regard to a couple of recipients, or several recipients. And they're asking for all of my communications. They want emails, telephone logs, text messages. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that the interpretation that the legislature has held, at least in the entire time that I've been here, I think going back to when the Republicans took over in 2002, is that individually, you and I are not bodies with a capacity to act, which is the specific language in the Sunshine Law, that the proceedings of a public body who has the ability to do something should be open to the public, and I agree that they absolutely should. But you and I have no individual ability to do anything without the votes of 17 of our colleagues. So therefore, you and I's individual communications do not fall under that. And I think that that's probably the proper interpretation. Now, what's really interesting to me is the reason we arrived at that interpretation, a little bit of history lesson for those of, who may not have been here because of term limits, but it was, if I remember correctly, Democrats harassing Speaker Rod Jetton at the time for his calendar, for his emails, for all of that, that led to this interpretation. So now to see a conservative group... and the law firm representing that group to be headed by the chairman of the Republican Party going after a Republican over the interpretation that the Republicans came up with in the first place is kind of a head-scratcher.
Well, not only that, but the former head or the interim head of the Republican Party is now the head of Missouri Alliance for Freedom. It was her who asked for the...
Now, who funds those guys?
Well, I think that a major chunk of their money is dark money, and you and I have been...
So we can't see who gives them money.
No.
But they want to see all of your emails.
But we do know that one of their major donors is a guy who also funds the Great Seals Dark Money Committee.
Now, how would you know that, if it's dark?
Well, I mean...
Just that he's admitted to it?
He bought the building that they're in. You know, apparently.
Oh, I see.
He bought the building that they're in, and I don't know. I'm quite mystified why the head of the Republican Party would be suing me. And surely that they could have found a different law firm. You know, his brother is my congressman, and yeah, and you're a congressman as well. And I just find it interesting. They want my personal emails. You know, when you have your secretary or your legislative assistant forward a state email to your iPhone, they'll make the argument that they should now have access to all of your personal emails and your text messages. I mean, and the question is, what's state business? If you text a lobbyist, is that state business?
Yeah, I mean that's I guess to be determined by the courts via this lawsuit.
Just because you're a senator, does every text message you send, is it state business? Because after all, you're a state elected official, so it must be state business.
You know, I mean, but again, if you look at what has historically been our interpretation of the Sunshine Law, you, as an individual senator, have no power.
Well, I guess we'll be seeing, but I have to tell you that every member of this body and every member of the House of Representatives ought to be looking at this very closely, because if they can get my emails and my text messages, they can get yours, and they can get the senator from Newton.
So I don't know the answer to
everyone's.
This. I don't know if you know the answer to this. If you were served the lawsuit, is the chairman of the party listed on your lawsuit?
Well, it's his law firm. I mean, it says, you know, the name of the law firm. The lawyer who signed the summons is his law firm.
So his law firm. So I wonder if, I don't know, again, I haven't talked to him about this. I wonder if he would be getting any billable hours, or, I mean, presumably his law firm will be profiting from, I mean, the dark money group will be paying him,
oh, yeah.
Right? So that I wonder, so the chairman of the party would probably be personally profiting from suing a Republican senator.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering that. You know, you and I worked on the dark money disclosure bill, and interestingly enough, Missouri Alliance for Freedom was very opposed to the idea of exposing dark money, and so I kind of feel like this is some kind of a punishment to me for, you know, trying to expose the corruption that goes on.
I mean, it's
I believe that there is. Like, for example, you know, we were just talking, the senator from Phelps and myself, about the fact that Express Scripts donated to the governor's inaugural committee and won't, you know, disclose the amount. And, you know, the idea here of opposing that means that the people can never know whether there's a connection between the amount given to the governor and now the contract that's being given to Express Scripts by the state of Missouri. The governor has the, you know, the ability to sign those contracts and assign those contracts, or his executive branch does, but yet the people don't know. The people have no idea how much Express Scripts gave. I mean,
That's the same group that just spent $500,000 on TV with a statewide commercial buy about balancing the budget as opposed to raising taxes, and call the governor and tell him what a great job he's doing, right? That's that same dark money group.
Yeah, it is.
We don't know because you can't disclose it. I mean, they could have paid for that entire ad buy.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is the governor goes and puts my personal cell phone number out there in ads across the state. My cell phone gets loaded up with calls. I tweet out that, you know, if you need to reach me, text me, because my cell phone is full. The governor's secret dark money committee changes its ad and says, text the senator instead of calling him.
Right.
And immediately, the Missouri Alliance for Freedom, you know, comes out against our dark money bill. And now they're suing me, wanting to get all my emails. I mean, what's the deal here? If you stand up for the people of Missouri, is this the way that you get treated? I apparently think it is.
I mean, it might be the new normal.
Well, maybe it is, and it's worrisome to me, because who's going to want to take this job? Who is going to want to be a legislator if everything that you say, write, and do is going to be subject to the scrutiny of somebody? If you're always fighting, and the people who are fighting you are the ones who are doing corrupt things, like taking money from an entity and then getting a no-bid, no-RFP contract. I'm hoping that the media are listening and are going to be asking these tough questions.
I would hope so. And they certainly have a lot they could write about.
Well, Senator, thank you for the inquiry. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolution. Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you recognize the senator from the 15th District for a privileged motion?
Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise? Please state your privileged motion.
I move that Senate Bill, our House Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 5 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
The senator from the 15th, the Senate Bill number, I'm sorry, Senate Substitute for Senate Bill number 5, the senator from the 15th.
A substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 5.
The senator from the 15th moves that Senate Substitute for Senate Bill number 5 be taken up for third reading and final passage. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 15th.
I move that House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 5 be adopted.
The senator from the 15th moves that House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 5 be read a third time and put upon its to be adopted. All those in favor. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a substitute motion.
Please state your substitute motion and send your motion.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate refuse to concur on House Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 5 as amended and request that the House recede from its position and take up and pass Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 5.
The senator from the first has moved that Senate refuse to concur on House Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Bill number 5 as amended and request the House recede from its position and to take up the passage of Senate Substitute for Senate Bill number 5. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire from the Senator first.
Senator first, you yield to the inquiry from the Senator from Franklin.
I do.
Senator Franklin, you may proceed.
I just want to be make sure that I understand your motion.
Sure.
Your motion is to send it to conference, or no. to refuse to send it to conference and take up and pass. So it's somewhat different than a motion to go to conference, refuse to.
This is not a conference motion.
This is not a conference motion.
It is a substitute motion to the main motion, and it would basically be to refuse to recede and encourage the House to pass what we all voted on.
In the event, this is a question, in the event that you're successful with this motion and the House would fail to concur.
Right.
Then what?
Well, my motion will have passed. We will have not taken up and passed their substitute. They will have not taken up or passed ours, and there will not be a change in the law.
Well, unfortunately, Senator, you know that I can't support that particular motion.
I understand that. And let me suggest that we have a main motion. We have a substitute motion. I don't know if other members of you've mentioned the word conference two or three times now. I don't know if anybody in the body wants to entertain that or not. But what I want to do is stick to the bill that we voted on here in the Senate last month.
Understand. I just wanted to make sure I was clear on your motion.
Yep. But, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. If I can get five members standing, I will request a roll call. Thank you.
You do have five senators standing. There will be a roll call vote. Senator from Clay, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire the senator from the first.
Senator from first, you yield to the inquiry from the senator from Clay.
I do.
Senator from Clay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. So let's just cover where we are.
Sure.
We came into this special session. We had the bill that was sent out of here after much deliberation.
Yes.
Much massaging, let's call it. Several changes made to the introduced version. We were able to send it over there. We didn't have a filibuster, ultimately.
With the we had the opposite of a filibuster, in fact.
Right, right. In fact, we had what started as a filibuster negotiated to a point that resulted in the Senate substitute, or what would have been a filibuster had there not been any changes. I mean, presumably.
I think it's fair to say there were conversations that were had before we came into session that had we instead come into session, you might have seen folks holding the floor while similar conversations would have occurred. Regardless, we got to where we got to.
Sure. So we send the bill over to the House. The House makes a number of changes, sends it back over here. Now, instead of having the original motion to go to conference, we have a motion to just take what the House sent us. You now have a substitute motion which says
take what the Senate says.
Take what the Senate sent.
Yep.
So we basically just have, between these two motions, the House saying, take our bill. Your substitute motion is the Senate saying, no, take our bill.
Right.
Okay. So procedurally, that's where we're at.
Right.
I will say, personally, I think probably the appropriate, what I would prefer is probably to go to conference. I think under normal, you know, procedure, we have the right to send whatever bill we want. The House has the right to send whatever bill they want. And then we would go work out the differences. And I understand it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes the chambers play hardball. Sometimes we say, no, take it, and they say, no, take it, but in normal session.
Right.
My preference would be to go to conference. That being said, given the choice between these two motions, the House made one change that I am very, very troubled about, which happens to deal with the Attorney General's language.
Sure.
With you being an attorney, you're probably the appropriate person to have this conversation with.
Sure.
So the bill that we sent out said that the Attorney General would have concurrent original jurisdiction over the state's abortion laws, but with a caveat. He would have to, it would only be in the case when the local prosecutor has chosen not to enforce them. The Attorney General would send a notice to the local prosecutor 10 days before they took any action. During those 10 days, the local prosecutor could choose to bring charges, at which case the Attorney General is no longer allowed to bring charges.
And if the prosecutor declines to, the Attorney General would then have concurrent original jurisdiction to move forward.
Correct. So the point here is we were trying to forecast a situation where perhaps you have a local elected prosecutor who's not a fan of the abortion laws and chooses not to enforce them.
Right.
The legislature wants to make sure that those laws have another option for enforcement. Therefore, we were going to allow the Attorney General to come in and do it. But the way the Senate version was written, it was only in the absence of action by the local prosecutor.
Right.
That's not what happened in the House, though.
Correct.
The House took that language and said, no. We're going to take it completely out of the hands of the local prosecutor. At least my reading of it is they now would give the Attorney General concurrent original jurisdiction with or without action by the prosecutor.
Right.
With no notice required and no opt-out.
Right.
Right? So basically, in essence, in this one area of law, the House version creates a state-level super prosecutor.
Yep. For that issue and that issue alone, in addition to consumer protection.
But the consumer protection actions are civil.
Right.
Am I right? Those are not criminal.
True.
So this would be...
They can be, but...
This would be criminal original jurisdiction, which, at least from what I got from research, would be a first.
Yeah, this would be it. Yeah. I mean, to that point, I mean, the erstwhile senator from Boone to last year or the year before
tried to do it with RICO.
Tried to bring in racketeering influence, corrupt organization, original jurisdiction for the Office of Attorney General. And I can still hear the echoes of the prosecutors howling from that discussion.
Oh, yeah, I know. And ultimately, we rejected that. We said, no, we don't want a state-level super prosecutor in that area of law. We want the locally elected prosecutors to do their job.
Ultimately, the bill got lost in someone's drawer. Yeah,
exactly. It never went anywhere. Yeah. This particular language that came from the House, according to what I read in the brief, and I don't have any paper here, so I'm doing this.
Sure.
I didn't know that we were going to do this right now, or I would have brought some notes.
We're both extemporizing here, Senator.
But from what I recall, research said that this language was offered in 2014 in the House. It made it to House rules, and it stopped. So the Senate never had any discussion of this language in 2014. In 2017, the last session, it was offered, I believe, by the senator from the 15th, at which point it got out of committee and was put on the informal calendar. So the Senate never
took it up.
Never took it up and voted on the House, like this version of the language, okay?
Right.
When this version of the language, the first time the Senate had a chance to address that was during this special session in the original underlying bill.
Yep.
Which we modified to say, okay, look, we want the local prosecutor to have basically, I'm not a lawyer, so this isn't legal speak, but right of first refusal.
Yeah, that's a fair characterization.
Right? So if you're going to prosecute it, then the Attorney General doesn't need to come in. This is my problem. I have a pro-life voting record. I have voted for every piece of pro-life legislation to come out of the House or the Senate in my 13 years in the legislature.
And I don't see that changing, Senator.
Here's my problem. This is an issue that creates a fundamental flaw moving forward in our process, in my opinion. Okay?
I share your concern.
The Senate version, I was able to tolerate because it allowed the right of first refusal. It did not give we did not have a state-level super prosecutor just for the sake of having it.
Okay? It allowed local prosecutors the opportunity to do their job.
So here's my problem. When we deal with writing state law, especially you and I in this era of term limits, you and I are going to be gone in a few years. The political winds, they ebb and flow.
Sure.
We pretty much operate in this country on a pendulum, swinging from right to left. And if you just go back and you look through the 241 years of our country's history, it's gone right to left, and there's been hard swings. What I don't want to do is pass a bill that sets a precedent that this legislature said it was okay to give original criminal jurisdiction to a state elected official, super prosecutor, for the first time ever in the history of the state, just because we happened to like the soundbite that the bill was about abortion and it was pro-life.
Because
I know that in the future, the winds will change.
Yes.
And in the future, we will have an attorney general that maybe I don't agree with. We will have a legislature that perhaps I don't agree with.
Sure.
And that attorney general and that would go to that legislature and say, hey, look, I want original criminal jurisdiction on pick your poison.
Right.
And then that legislature points to this bill and says that there's precedent for doing so on whatever the political whim of that day is, and I don't want to start that trend. I don't want to go down that road. So that creates a problem for me because I voted for the bill coming out of here.
Yep.
The other stuff that's in this bill, dealing with the medical side of things, dealing with the notice side of things, dealing with the fetal tissue side of things, even though those things were changed in the House and made a little bit more restrictive in some cases than what came out of here, I don't have a problem with that in general. But I have a huge problem with this for the precedent that it sets moving forward for future generations of the legislature and future generations of attorney generals.
Well,
and
right.
It erodes, the local prosecutors.
And here's why, as somebody who believes as you do, as somebody who has a 13-year pro-life voting record, should oppose that provision and should want to either go with the Senate version or talk about it some more with the House. Here's why. As I read that language, I believe, I mean, you know, let's face it. Can you imagine this body trying to get this provision for our last attorney general?
That's my point.
So, exactly. And what if our next attorney general has a different view than our current Attorney General of the issue, because I think under what the House has done here, I think that a pro-choice Attorney General can very possibly get in the way of every county prosecutor in the state trying to enforce our abortion laws. And I'm not right, wrong, or indifferent. The point is, I could make the case that if you want the laws that are on the books enforced, I would argue that the language that the Senate passed guards against that scenario better than what the House has done.
Right.
Because there will be different attorneys general over time with different views.
The language that the Senate passed creates, it takes care of that issue, that if the local prosecutor doesn't act, that's the end of
right.
the road.
Yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't set up a super prosecutor who can come in for political reasons
yep.
and say, oh, you know what, I want my pro-life cred to go up. So even though there may be charges being brought at the local level, I'm going to bring my own charges because I want to get the press for it.
Well, and
that's
you know,
one thing.
Well, and an attorney general could file charges specifically with the intention of preempting local prosecutors and then doing nothing with the file, not moving the case.
Yeah, that's right.
In order to keep it from getting prosecuted.
That's right. That could happen, too. And so then that very language could come back and solidify the problem you're trying to avoid, which is no prosecution.
Literally, the House version of this bill creates the problem it is trying to solve.
Potentially. In the future.
Yeah.
So that's a big problem for me. Because as it stands right now, I don't think that I can open that box.
Sure.
Let's think about it. Let's put it in a different frame of reference. Let's say that we look in the crystal ball and this legislature passed right to work. Let's say the signatures get collected, which the effort is underway right now, and the voters reject it and say, nope, we're keeping the labor laws the way they were.
Sure.
Then let's say a future attorney general comes to that future legislature and says, you know what? I want original jurisdiction over our labor laws to enforce prevailing wage, to enforce collective bargaining, to do whatever. The people in this room that are getting ready to vote to give this power to the attorney general would probably roll over.
Right. Philosophical consistencies get in our way, right?
So the problem with creating public policy, if you're really serious about the policy, the issue should be interchangeable.
Should be.
But when you create public policy moving forward and you put statutes on our books that are going to create a process that you're okay with in one circumstance but not okay with if you change the political issue is not good public policy.
Respectfully, we're doing that in a separate spot in this bill. Man, we love ourselves some local control in this chamber until we don't.
No, we don't. No, yeah. we don't. Yeah. I'm convinced that we don't anymore.
But my point is, as a matter of public policy, there is no philosophical consistency in our policy.
Look, man, when we passed the bill preempting the plastic bag ordinance,
yeah,
I gave up all hope that the legislature cares about local control. That to me was the line.
Well, go and just try to pass a statewide curriculum through this chamber, Senator, and let me know if local control is going to have some currency still or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hear you. So here's my problem. I'm prepared, as the language stands, to vote against the bill. It'd be the first pro-life bill in 13 years that I voted against. And it has nothing to do with abortion. Nothing to do with being pro-life. Nothing to do with the medical clauses or the emergency clauses or any of the other stuff in this bill that I voted for in the first place, moving the other direction. I just did not get elected and come down here to create bad policy because it's a good issue. And I'm not going to do it. So I say that because we are now on a substitute motion.
Yes.
My preference is go to conference, fix the attorney general thing, or at least have the discussion. And then if it comes back, then I have to make that decision on what I'm going to do. That would be my preference. But I don't have that decision before me. I have the decision of your motion.
Sure.
And if it passes, then I'm fine with the language that we're talking about putting on the statutes because that's what I voted for coming out of here. If it fails, we're back on the underlying motion.
Right.
At that point, I would very much like to see a conference motion made so I could have at least the the option of talking about it.
Well, let me suggest this, Senator, if I may, and I'm not advocating. I've made the motion that I want this body to pass. I can also count to 25.
I'm fine with your motion in regards of the language it would put in the books.
Right.
Procedurally, I would prefer that we try to work out some things.
Well, and let me suggest that in the interest of bicameralism, under almost any other set of circumstances, this is a conference would be where this would go without a whole lot of debate about it, except for maybe this past year, but that's another story. Let me suggest this. There's been a main motion. There's been a substitute motion. If you want to amend my substitute motion to make it a conference motion, I'm not going to do anything to impede that from coming to a vote. I will say that there are some members of the body who are very upset that we're even having this debate, all right, who feel that the motion that should have been made, that my motion should have been the one that was made in the first place.
I understand.
Yeah.
And it's a perfectly defensible view.
Right.
I take no issue with it.
Yeah. So what I would say is I've made the motion I want to stand by. I am not going to get in the way if members of this body want to go to conference instead. I'm not going to keep that from coming to a vote or do anything to keep that from coming to a vote.
Sure.
And I'm going to listen to the debate before I come to a conclusion as to how I vote. But
sure.
Not before the body right now.
You have your roll call on your motion.
Sure.
And I will be supporting your motion because the language it would put into law, assuming that it went to the House and the House receded from their position, is language that I find acceptable. So I will support your motion. If your motion fails, I hope we have a similar discussion on conference, because I just, again, first time in 13 years I'm going to vote against a pro-life bill, and it's for something that has absolutely nothing to do with being pro-life.
Well, I have many reasons why I oppose this bill, and why I am more opposed to the House version than the Senate version. You have identified one of my reasons why I don't like the House version. And that is because I think it interferes with, to an even greater extent than the underlying Senate version, of the autonomy of local prosecutors. And that is something that I want to defend as much as I can.
Yeah. Well, again, I wanted to have this conversation with you both on a level of you being an attorney and us talking about the Attorney General language, sure, but also to let you know that I will be supporting your motion. And I am hopeful that we can get a resolution to this, because here's what I don't want to do. I don't want this thing to pass, and then everybody go, oh, you know, we can just come back in January and fix it. Because you know how many times we've come back in January since I've been here and actually fixed something that we said we were going to come back in January and fix?
Yeah, not as often as we've had the need. Yeah.
Very easy to say it, just to get the bill out of here. Or how about this? How about we all bristle whenever we're like, oh, we'll just fix it in the House. Let's just pass it, and we'll just fix it in the House. That's not how you make policy.
No.
You try to get it right the first time. And to be under some artificial timeline, to put policy on the books that you know is detrimental, I just can't be a part of that.
Well, and to that point, Senator, several members of this body worked awfully hard and long to try to get this right the first time. I get that there's bicameralism, but there was a lot that went into the Senate version of this bill.
Believe me, I understand that. And again, that, you know, if you want to start talking about philosophical, how the Senate operates, kind of level of discussion, I have all kinds of other reasons why I would support your motion and why I would support going to conference as opposed to just taking what was sent over. But I don't think that the entire world needs to hear my treatise on how the Senate should operate today.
Well, let's hope that it doesn't get the opportunity, but one never knows, Senator.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the substitute motion from the senator from the 1st? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 24th?
I do.
Senator from the 24th, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good evening, Senator. How are you?
Good evening.
Senator, I know that there are a lot of emotions around the issue of abortion. But to me, what's going on here today is even bigger than that specific issue. Back when we worked on this bill in June, some of us worked all day long before we went into session, and I think that there were a lot of people who thought we were going to go into session in the morning, and we did not. And the reason was we were working to try to get a bill to see if there was a way to move into a session where people with my perspective and my point of view didn't feel like we needed to filibuster in order for this chamber to move forward.
Right. I know you worked very hard on trying to get to that point.
Yes, we did. And I, for some reason in my head, I keep coming up with the estimate of about 14 hours of back and forth trying to figure out if there was a way that I could be senatorial and work with people here to come to a compromise on a bill that I, quite frankly, hate, that I think hurts women. And yet I sat down with, originally with the senator from Green, and then with the senator from the 15th, to make sure that we could find compromise where we could. The bill that we ended up with, that this chamber supported, went far beyond the original bill that either of those senators sponsored. And actually, I thought that we had negotiated, we were at a place where we had negotiated something and thought we'd be coming back into the chamber, and hadn't heard back from the senator from the 15th. So went to his office and learned that he had a change of heart, even though we had said, yes, we agreed on a bill. So we went up to the pro tem's office, and you were in there, and my Democratic leader was in there, and we all sat around and figured out what it was that the senator from the 15th still felt unhappy with, that we hadn't heard about before. We went back to the drawing board. And after hours and hours of back and forth, we came up with a bill that the senator from the 15th agreed to support, that everyone in that room on both sides of the aisle said, we will support this bill and move it forward, that this is the Senate's bill, that this is the version that we will send to the House, and this is the version we will stand by. Our word is put on that bill. And that is the bill that this most recent motion talks about, the original Senate substitute for Senate Bill 5. And yet here we are today, and my bigger question than the specifics of what's in that bill, which, believe me, I can go into if we need to, but my bigger question is, when is our word our bond? Do you agree, Senator, that when we were in the pro tem's office, that we came to an agreement that our Senate substitute for Senate Bill 5 was the bill that would move forward?
Yeah, but just like you, you've told me this, I guess it's all right that I say this, you've told me many times, you hated that bill that came out of here.
I did.
And you still do.
I still do.
We had members of our caucus who hated that bill.
And
still
yet,
do.
Your caucus supported it, so, because certainly none of mine did.
They did. We were able to vote it out of here late that night, as I recall, or maybe even to the next morning before we got...
Well, both.
Both. We did both. That's right. But there are people who, no matter where you got that bill to, you don't like it because you think it's damaging. There are people in our caucus who don't like it because they didn't think it went far enough.
Well, and interestingly, you know, I know that in a month's period of time, people have time to think over things and change their minds, but imagine if this went on in the true process where the Senate and the House work in a regular legislative session as opposed to this extraordinary session. We would have been working on this bill and many others. Quite frankly, the origins of this bill were here in the legislative session, and they didn't make it to the finish line. Why? Because this body and the House decided that there were other more pressing issues. There were other priorities. As you and I know, not every bill gets passed, even if the majority of people in the room think it's a good bill, during every session. And you know what? I think that's a good thing. And I'll bet you'll agree. Because what it does is it allows for compromise. It allows for thoughtful legislation to move forward and for us to really determine where our priorities lie. When we're put into a special session where this is the only thing put before us, it's a priority because the governor, he is a governor, not a legislator, the governor made a decision that this is his priority, regardless of the bond that was established here, regardless of the word that we gave that, yes, this is the Senate's version of the bill, and the majority of the members of the Republican caucus passed this bill out and over to the House. And we even talked about the fact that we would not agree to any more special sessions on abortion, that if there were more laws that the governor saw fit to pass, that he would have to bring it and talk to caucus members, maybe even on both sides of the aisle, during the legislative process that we all expect to be here for. So today, my question to you is, Senator, if our word means nothing in this chamber, if we can change because some time has passed, if we can say those hours that you sat down and said you wouldn't get up and filibuster, you wouldn't, meaning me, I wouldn't get up and filibuster, I wouldn't force a PQ on this body so that we could go forward and continue to work together, if none of that matters, then what is this chamber?
Yeah, I would just respectfully say a couple of things. I believe in the members that I serve in my caucus with that life is a big priority. And I remember
life
spending,
is a big priority to our
spending,
caucus, too.
Our definition of, not that you have a different definition, but some of the things that we think are a little bit more pro-life. We spent a lot of hours on a bill, as you recall, from the Senator from Cape Girardeau. I think late in the night. I think he almost fell asleep. We were so late doing it that night. But so we did spend some time, and as you know, time in the Senate is very valuable because we have a lot of issues that come down upon us with all these bills that end up coming over. So we did, in regular session, we did spend quite a bit of time.
We did.
And I know, to your credit, even after that long debate that we had on the Senator from Cape's bill, you had some continued follow-up. And so I know that, you know, we talked quite a bit about that. But when we were here back in June, I think we did give our word, and we voted what we based on, we said was a compromise bill, and we sent it to our to the House. That's how I believe this body, both sides of the aisle, if you will, kept its commitment, because that was, there were people, as I mentioned, you didn't like the bill. There were people in our caucus still today who just hated that bill, didn't think it went far enough. You thought it went too far. But they did keep their word. They voted for it, and they voted out of it. Now, they changed it in the House, which is the one thing I made clear to you and the majority leader, is that if they change over there, that's the one thing we can't stop. I didn't think they were going to, but they did. I don't have major problems with what they did. I do have some concerns with what the senator from Clay pointed out, but to the point that the senator from the first made is now we're in a predicament where we would have to worry about getting nothing. And I think that's totally unacceptable. If we were to send back and say we only will take the Senate bill the way we pass it out of the Senate and the House rejects that and we end up with nothing, in my world and for my constituents, that would be horrible.
Well, and I understand that concern, but if we sent our bill over and say we stand by this bill, we stand with this bill, and now we're saying to you, to the House, and the House has a supermajority of people who are anti-choice, pro-life, the House is going to feel the same way. They're not going to want to walk away with nothing. My question to you is, so does that mean that our word, what we've committed to, goes out the door as soon as somebody else offers a different position?
Well, I mean, it happens, unfortunately, and as you pointed out, through the regular session on bills all the time. We have a Senate position, and we send it to the House, and sometimes they change it, and sometimes we're able to take it, and sometimes we're not. So I don't know that – I believe our word happened when we all, even though you didn't like it, and we had people that didn't like it, on that late night, early morning the next day, we voted it out of here, in spite of people not liking it for different reasons.
Well, and again, it was the majority party who voted it out here. But my question to you is, so it just ends. So that vote was it. When you say there's a commitment to me, a commitment to those of us who were against that, a commitment to those of us who were willing to stand up until perhaps you had to PQ us, that it ends when the lights shut off that night, that it doesn't go beyond that, that it is not a true commitment about this bill being the bill that's supposed to go to the finish line, because those are the conversations we had in that office that night.
Right.
And me, starting from a place where the senator from the 15th offers a bill that supports the House position is so contrary to anything that I would think is what this chamber stands for and how this chamber operates. And the lessons that I'm going to learn from this, should we go forward with the underlying motion or even go to conference, is that there is no such thing as your word is your bond. There is no such thing as we will follow through and be good stewards of the time and the heart and the passion and the negotiation that went in to getting us to a point where, again, none of the people on my side of the aisle could support this, but enough people on your side of the aisle certainly did.
I believe everybody went forward with that commitment that night and early morning, again, even though there were folks on your side who hated it because it went too far, and people on our side that hated it because it didn't go far enough. I mean, we had indications from the House that that was the bill that they would take up.
Which is why I feel like we discussed the idea that this was the bill that would make it across the finish line. And forgive me for interrupting you. While you say that, you know, there may be one change, like as the senator from, Clay stated, there are a lot of changes in there that I can't tolerate. And so what you're asking me to do is to say, throw out my, what does this mean for future negotiation and teamwork? What does this mean when someday the numbers change again? How do we go forward?
Well, I think we negotiated the best we could that day, and both sides kept true to their promise by voting it out of here, like, unlike it or didn't like it. And I believe that's where
the whole deal.
Well, we, Senator, you and I and the majority leader, I can tell you, minority leader, right at those two doors talked, and I said, the only thing we don't know, we can't guarantee, we think we know, is what the House will do when they get this.
But our reaction to what the House does, to me, is what's critical here, and that's what I don't understand. We said this is the position that we're taking, and this is where how we expect this to move forward, and now the only thing we can do is act or react, and I'm shocked and dismayed that our reaction may be, okay, we'll take what you give us, or we'll modify this place that we came to as a body and agreed to.
Well, that's what the building does, though, is that you form positions, and the other side, or sometimes it's us to them, have different ideas on how those positions should go forward, and then we end up here. So we end up debating that.
This is an extraordinary session, and during this session, again, tell me if I'm understanding incorrectly, but my understanding was that the Senate was standing by this position, the Senate substitute
Bill 5.
We voted it out, and we would stand with that position. That was the bill we were going to get across the finish line.
Yeah, I think that was the deals that we voted it out. I mean, do you agree that we had a conversation?
We voted it out, but my understanding was that it didn't end there.
Since you're putting me on the spot, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Sure.
Don't you agree we had a conversation, you and the minority leader and I, that what the one thing we can control, you or I, is what the House did to that bill?
Certainly, but we can control our response to it, and that's what I'm saying.
That's what we're here for today.
Well, and so that's what I'm saying to you. I'm saying, Senator, you were part of that team that agreed to and understood that deal.
I was also part of a team, as an individual representing my district.
I didn't think
the bill went far enough. But
okay.
as part of the compromise.
Right, that was the compromise position. So I'm asking you in front of this body, are we willing to stand with the position that we reach in compromise, or?
Well, we did stand with it. We stood with it that night.
Well, that doesn't get us across the finish line.
Well, that's why we're here today, to see what we can work through.
Well, I just want to make it clear that a deal was agreed to. And when I say a deal, a bill was agreed to. And after a lot of work and negotiation, after what I consider to be giant steps towards policies and positions that I think are bad for the women of this state. And yet, the deal, my understanding of the passage of that bill, the Senate would stand with it and see it clear to the finish line. What you're telling me now is, because the House did something we didn't expect or weren't expecting, that we're just going to throw our hands up and say, well, we don't know if we're going to stand with that deal anymore. We don't know if we're going to stand with the bill that we agreed was the bill that we had negotiated.
No, I think the senator from 15th has made a motion, and the senator from the 1st has another motion before us, so I think that's what you discuss. That's what the body does.
So I wanna also be clear that when the governor calls a special session and revises his call, and especially one that is not an emergency situation from my perspective, and I think from many of our colleagues' perspectives, when we keep allowing the governor to be the determiner of the legislation that will or will not pass, and specifically what it will look like, haven't we abdicated our responsibility as elected officials and legislators to the governor? And where is this line going to be drawn? You know, I've heard people say, well, this is abortion, so this is different. Well, next time there's going to be something in the next issue he calls us in for that's going to matter to people, and then we're going to go ahead and do the governor's bidding again. And this is going to repeat ourselves so that at some point in time, there is no need for the Senate, and there is no need for compromise and negotiation and working together. So I am saying to you, I don't like that we passed any bill on abortion during the interim in an extraordinary session, because quite frankly, we didn't do that during our regular session. And here we are, and I have said, okay, I don't like that we're here for this. I don't think it's an emergency of any kind. And yet, I found a way to work with members of your side of the aisle so that I could sit down and let this go forward.
But you would agree that we did work on a pro-life bill during regular session, and
we worked on it.
You didn't care for that, so we spent a lot of time.
Right. Actually, I worked for hours and hours. I think
I would call that a filibuster against that bill, basically. Right.
No.
The bill from Cape Girardeau.
We didn't.
No. I'm talking about during regular session.
I know, and I'm saying I worked with the senator, but the bill didn't make it across the finish line. It happens.
And I would also say that, you know, for myself, for my own personal beliefs, and for the constituents that I represent, if we come together in our minds, if we do anything that just saves one innocent life, I think it was worth being here. And that's I know we disagree on that.
Well, and
but
again,
I believe
I'm not talking,
that
you
to
know,
my heart.
We do disagree on that. And I think that there are a lot of lives that are at stake. And I think they're the lives of the women who find themselves pregnant in terrible situations. But I think what's bigger and more important than that, than the details of the bill, although trust me, I am well prepared to get into those. I'm talking about the sanctity of this chamber and the work that is done here to represent your constituents and mine, mm-hmm. and to make sure that this legislative process moves forward without a dictator or a king at the helm telling us, this is what you'll do, this is how you'll do it, this is what it will look like, and then you'll be done, and then I'll call you back for the next one. So I think that's what's going on here, and I'm hopeful that your members, and I know certainly mine, they're not mine, but my colleagues, will feel the same way about how we move forward. So I thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Is there any other senators desire to be heard? Senator from the 24th, are you finished, or would you like to?
Like to continue, thank you.
Okay, Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the Senator from the 5th?
Senator from the 5th, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 24th?
Oh, yes, I do, Mr. President.
Senator from the 24th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, how are you today?
I'm not good today. I'm not good at all today.
Right, so.
You know what, I am sick and tired of the Republican Party bullying women here in the state of Missouri. And I'm going to say today, enough is enough. I'm ready to go down fighting because I'm tired of the Republican Party bullying women when it comes to their right to choose.
Well, Senator, I as you know, I am with you 100% on the policy, but I am when we talk about the substitute motion brought up by the senator from the first, I think the critical nature of that is that we in this body, and I don't think you were here for part of this, so you were unable to participate in that, but we in this body reached an agreement that certain parts of this bill that were very important to our colleagues on the other side of the aisle would be passed. We would allow them to move forward without PQing, and that would be the bill that moved across the finish line. Now, I know you don't like that bill, and I don't either. There are a lot of people that don't, but sometimes compromise creates bills that people aren't crazy about. The question in my mind becomes, is the Senate big enough? Is the Senate strong enough? Does the Senate believe in itself and its ability to create policy enough that it stands by the commitments it makes?
You know, Senator, you made a great point, and you really, you know, touched on some really crucial issues, and that's the issue of integrity. All we have in this chamber is our word. And it sounds like a cliche, but our word is our bond. And so when the majority leader tell you that he's going to hold the line and take the Senate position, then he gives you that word, then he should stand on that word. You know, and so what do we have here now? You know, the Democratic Party here has shown us, you know, who they are, that they are bullies, that they're willing to go to the extent to do away with women's rights. And I'm saying this, you don't have to say it, okay? This is how I feel, okay? Not only are they bullies, they're being bullied because, you know, contrary to popular belief, the governor and I, we have a cordial relationship, okay? We don't always agree on policies, but we do have a cordial relationship to the extent where we dialogue, we talk, we work on things together. But how do you let one branch of government, the executive branch of government, talk down on you, the legislative branch, meaning the Republicans in the House and the Senate, call you third graders,
right,
and say that you don't even know how to manage monies? I mean, I just saw that on the ad. And then you come back here and you carry the water. Now, what they're doing today, it's not like they cannot do this during regular session. You're talking about a party who controls the majority House, the Senate, and not to mention the governor's mansion. So you are bullies, meaning the Republican Party, and you're being bullied by the executive branch. Okay, we have three levels of government. And I'm telling you that for individuals to defame you and disrespect you, and then you turn around and carry the water, is appalling to me.
Well, I think that, Senator, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that this body is supposed to be about integrity. And that's the question I'm raising today. And integrity means standing with the position that everyone agreed to, the Senate position. So I'm going to end our inquiry. I know that you would like to talk, and there are other people who
would. Oh, yeah,
would.
I'm going to talk. Yes, I am.
I'm hopeful that this frivolous session ends with us standing together as a Senate in support of those things that we had agreed to as a body. So thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. President!
Do you know, Senator, desire to be heard. Senator from the 7th, for raising your eyes.
I would like to inquire the Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, please summon the Senator from Cole.
I'm standing right here. It's been quicker.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry of the senator from the 7th?
From which senator?
From the 7th.
Yes.
It's a tough question. Senator from the 7th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. I felt if I didn't get the floor, I might not get a chance, considering the interest from my other colleagues, and I wanted to have a conversation with you about a couple of issues. I want to start with where we are here tonight after the senator from the 24th had her inquiry with you. I'm going to take a slightly different approach to the same sort of problem. What she was talking about primarily was the intra-chamber consequences of having a deal be made between leadership teams or any negotiating teams, really, being that this is the Senate, and then having that deal feel like it wasn't followed through on. I'll give you an example. When we did the 72-hour bill a couple years ago, 2013, there was a deal during session that we would sit down on some changes to the bill, and they would go through. At the time, Minority Leader Jolie Justice decided that she was unhappy with that deal over time passed. She decided to filibuster it during veto session and was subsequently PQ'd.
I remember that.
Because Pro Tem Dempsey felt like there was a deal in place. That deal didn't have an expiration on it, and that just because we were out of regular session, that deal should still hold. And that was the justification for many of your colleagues voting yes on the previous question. So I just want to point out that when it comes to the intra-chamber mechanisms of negotiating, whatever happens here will have an impact on how we do that going forward.
Right. Well, and as you heard me tell the senator from the 24th, just as you have in your caucus meetings, your leadership could try to get to a certain spot on any bill that we've had before us, and not 100% of your members says, oh, I'm 100% for that.
Right.
In fact, the senator from the 24th, as you heard her say, did not like that bill, but right. She had worked in good faith to get to that point.
So, and I don't disagree, and I also don't disagree with your assessment that you cannot be held responsible for making us a unicameral system. We have another chamber that constitutionally has the power and authority to make changes to that legislation as it passes back and forth between the two branches or the two houses. My problem is when you have what we saw over the last couple weeks, where a governor comes into one of those branches of government and essentially, and I'm going to use the word collude because I can't really find a better one, colludes on the language that the House is going to change from the Senate position and then changes the call to match the House position in order to try to box us in on any additional amendments that could be brought up. That's a circumvention of the natural legislative process. That is an artificial infliction of the governor's will over this, what we do here. And what I further have, serious conflict with is that, yes, you cannot be held responsible for having a unicameral system, but what you can be held responsible for is at the very minimum supporting a position that would take us to conference so that we could get to the position that we came out of here with and fight for those positions in that conference committee. To have the senator from the 15th adopt the governor's position as he's changed the call and colluded with the House, in the old Senate before term limits, they would have come in and signed he died. They would not have allowed the executive branch to cut a deal with the House to change the call to box in the Senate from doing its job. And I have serious problems if we, as members of this chamber, allow that to happen. Now, am I in favor of what the conference committee report is going to produce? Probably not.
Three senators standing. Senator from Barrie, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask unanimous consent to make a special announcement.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed with your announcement.
Fine. Mr. President, on your left and on my right, sitting at the table, there is an analyst by the name of Jessie, and she just recently has gotten married. And what's interesting, her last name now is James. So we can call her Jessie James, but I'm real proud of her, and I just wanted to make that announcement. Thank you.
Senator, you may proceed with your debate.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. President.
I think it was Frank James that surrendered to Governor Crittenden, if I recall.
Poor choice on his part.
And maybe. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. So my problem is that if we as a chamber support the senator from the 15th's underlying motion, and we do not choose to go to conference on this bill, then the position that you've drawn, which is saying, yes, I committed to this being the version that we would as a chamber support, you're not even giving that commitment a chance to stick.
We're not on a conference motion, though.
No, but I think that after hearing the discussion, we should be. And while, again, I don't know that I would support what came out, I have serious concerns with the Attorney General part of this bill. Not that I don't have lesser concerns with the other parts and the negative impact that I think will be on a woman's right to choose, but I specifically and particularly think that Attorney General portion is going to be something that we regret in the future. And what I've heard from many members that I won't call out here, they also agree, but because of the circumstances and the timing and the House won't come in until Wednesday, and by golly, we're getting close to the end of this. I mean, we agree with you. We'll fix it next year. That's not something that good legislators do.
Right.
Good legislators say, look, we had a position coming out of the Senate. That position has now been changed. What we want to do is go to conference to discuss those two varying positions to get to a place where perhaps successful negotiators can find a place where you don't have to use the previous question to get to the end of the line. And if we adopt the senator from the 15th's underlying motion, that's all gone. We don't even have that chance anymore. So I have a problem with there. I think we're discussing if a motion to send it to conference is going to be offered here before we actually take action on the roll called motion in front of us. But I would hope that when that vote comes, if we do vote to go to conference, that at that particular point in time, you would have a chance to support the position that you took, saying that the Senate version was a version that I voted yes on, and I'm willing to let us have a discussion to see if there's a place between those two points.
But as you know, in any issue, and this happens to you, you've told me it's happened to you on other issues, not on this issue, your constituents start to weigh in when they see something that's been done, in this case with language that's been added into the House. And you also have, you know, you and I and 34 of us have this, well, 33 of us, because one guy, he left us up there. But we have this weird, you know, situation where we fight real hard to get to something, and then you're under your 180,000 plus constituents, obviously not every one of them, but then they start weighing in when they see what the House did and said, hey, why didn't you do that when you were in the Senate? And several of us have said, we didn't like the bill that came out of the Senate. We wanted it stronger anyway. And so now you have something that your constituents also favor. And like I told the senator from the 24th, I didn't, just as much as she didn't like the bill that left here because she thought it went too far, there were several people who didn't like it because it didn't go far enough. So,
and I think that what you're saying there, basically my constituents have new information that they're now lobbying me on behalf of, would be an argument to hold a position in conference. But it wouldn't necessarily be an argument to not go to conference.
Yeah, no, like I said, that's not before us, but I'm just telling you that's what happens in these deals,
right?
Is that when the House, as you noted, that you can't stop what they're going to do over there, when they change a bill, no matter what the issue is, it gives the conversation added life or another chapter in a book to start talking about.
Have you heard from any of your constituents about giving the Attorney General, making him a super prosecutor? Because that's not a conservative position.
I'll tell you, and as you heard me tell the senator from the 24th, that is the one piece that gives me concern. But I have not heard, and that's unusual, I have not heard, probably after I say this I will, we have not heard concerns with that.
Well, I would hope that we would give the negotiated position, the Senate position, a chance to go to conference, so at least the members who want that position to stick have a chance to fight for that position. So perhaps a conversation. But I want two more quick things while I have you here. The first is you heard earlier the senator from the 34th and the budget chair discuss Rather, the governor has the ability to restore cuts to foster care program. Have you had a chance to look, and can you confirm or verify if his actions were restoring a withhold, or did he restore a cut?
I haven't looked at it, but what I understood was he restored a withhold.
He restored a withhold.
That's what I understand.
So he would have the constitutional authority to restore a withhold.
As other governors have done, yes.
Right. Okay. The second part of my question extends to the executive order on the PDMP. You would agree that if the governor has the authority to direct an agency on a particular action, he does not have the authority to allocate the funds unilaterally for the implementation of that action.
I would agree to that. Why do you say that?
I'm asking you. Would you agree that the Constitution maintains the power of the purse exclusively in the legislative branch?
Well, I think that the governor has, and I don't know this specifically about this issue, so I don't want to paint this with a huge brush, but I think that the governor has some discretionary leeway to what he believes, and I haven't had a legal opinion on this, fund the initiative that he is certainly trying to push forward.
Last question I have for you, Senator, and I appreciate your time. You know, one of the themes that we've talked about over the course of this entire summer is the lack of communication and cooperation between the branches. The governor chose to change his call to match the House version. Did you or the President Pro Tem get a call from the governor letting you know he was going to do that?
You'd have to ask the Pro Tem. I don't know what he did. I speak to the governor's staff more because I'm here in the city and in the building a lot more. So I did know the change to the call was coming, yes.
It was coming. What kind of precedent?
Probably at the same time. It wasn't. No governor has ever called and asked my opinion on anything. So
I'm curious what kind of precedents, and many of them are being set here for future governors to look at and say, well, it's just a lot easier if I call the guys' names, I don't have to work with them, I don't have to talk to them, I can dispatch my staff to deal with them, and then I'm just going to do what I want, and they're not going to stand up to me. That's what I am seeing is the lessons that this governor is teaching the state right now.
It's
disconcerting to me.
In this business, you and I, and you've been at it longer than I have, you see a lot of positioning from different people, and I believe that the people I serve with in this body are honorable, good people here for the right reasons, and that's the opinion I go by.
Well, I'm of the opinion that someone who makes a career at something is probably pretty competent, so when he calls me a career politician, I take it as a compliment.
I wish he'd call me a career car dealer. That's a big compliment for me.
All right, Senator, I appreciate your time. Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th, with purpose you rise.
I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 34th.
Senator from Buchanan, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 7th.
I do.
Senator from the 7th, you may proceed.
Senator, I talked to the majority leader about the lawsuit being brought against you. In fact, let me do that real quick. I'm going to come back to you. Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from Cole. Back to you.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 7th?
From the 7th?
From the 7th.
I'm back. I forgot one.
Senator,
I knew I was going to write me this stuff.
You get a paper plate.
Senator from the 7th, you may proceed.
Okay, as you know, or as you I'm sure have read, a law firm that is being managed by the executive director of the Republican Party is brought a lawsuit against one of our fellow colleagues trying to get access to his personal emails. Are you familiar with...
I am familiar with what I've read and a brief discussion that I cannot disclose the location of that I had with the senator from the 34th.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. The history behind this is fascinating. 10 years ago, a Democratic progressive group named Progress Missouri was trying to get Rod Jetton's email, Sunshine. Don LaGrasso, the counsel of the House at the time, defended Jetton as an individual and they were blocked from getting that. So for a decade, the liberals, the progressives, have been trying to get access to state public communications, or not public, but state private communications between legislators to bring sunlight into how the mechanisms of government have been working. They've been stopped at doing that. Now we have the executive director of the Republican Party asking to do that, what we've been asking for 10 years, on one of your own members. So I have two questions for you. One, in your opinion as the majority leader of this chamber, do you think that those personal emails are subject to the Sunshine Law and should be turned over?
No.
And will the Senate be appointing a legal representative for the senator from the 34th to defend him in this lawsuit?
We haven't gotten that far. I spoke to the senator from the 34th just for a few nanoseconds about that. But I believe it's an important issue that we, no matter what side of the aisle you're on in this body, that we protect our senators' privacies.
If the lawsuit is successful, and if the personal emails are allowed to be sunshined, what would stop then text messages, anything, any other communication that we have from being open to the sunshine?
I'm not sure it would. And as you know, we all get communications from constituents that they probably would not want broadcast that are, I mean, I get a lot of stuff that's very personal. Not personal in nature, but it's a personal story, a personal problem, personal issue. And so I would worry about, you know, the constituents having that, the fear that those communications, because it is the communication of the day, right? Not everybody has time to come down from Kansas City or St. Louis and see us face to face. We all prefer that. It just doesn't happen. But there'd be a lot of concern, I think, to constituents about their ability to keep a situation confidential that they communicate it with their elected official that way.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 34th.
Senator from Buchanan, you yield to inquire from the senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening.
Well, we've got a few issues here that we're discussing. We've got the motions in front of us, which is probably the precedence that we should
discuss. I'd like to talk to you about that. I totally agree with the senator from the 24th that once a negotiation is had and the entire caucus of the Democrat Party decides that they will stop filibustering because they've achieved a version of the bill that would allow them to sit down, the heartburn factor is low enough that they don't feel the need to filibuster, to let that version go to the House and then have the House just change it back, send it back, and then to pick that up and to PQ over it, to my way of thinking, is not respectful to the people of Missouri. And why? It's because the negotiators could have PQ'd the minority party early on and had it done, just PQ'd, and then that would save the people of Missouri a bunch of money because the House could have picked it up and passed it and avoided having to have it come back to the House, potentially go back to, back to the Senate, potentially back to the House. I mean, it would have saved the people of Missouri a bunch of money. If you're going to PQ ultimately anyway, why not just PQ up front and save the voters money? Not only that, but how can the senator from the 24th ever have any confidence that those senators negotiating will keep their word in the future? Because, you know, it may be true that, you know, this is an important issue, that, you know, it's an issue that's deep in their heart, but their need to be, you know, good to their word rises above that, in my opinion.
Well, I think that you need to separate the procedural motions from the issue. You can vote to send this to conference and still be pro-life. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive. You don't have to cast a vote on procedural issues because you're afraid that someone's going to use that against you in a future election. The bottom line is we've identified a portion of this bill that creates serious policy concerns with members of both aisles, and yet we're not going to do it because we're worried about how it looks. We're not going to do it because the governor's putting pressure on the bill sponsor not to do it. We're not going to do it because the governor changed his call to match what the House did, which is collusion. And I think that our chamber is continually eroding its authority in this process because of the actions of the governor and the House.
I have to tell you that in the past, we've had a lot of bills where sponsors said, oh, I think this one will pass constitutional muster. This one, the court will approve, and they won't reject it. And then the court rejected it. And I believe that there's a significant chance that no matter what we pass out, the court will throw this out. Not only that, but I think that the way that the governor has agreed to go ahead and give the licenses to the two abortion clinics basically means that this bill is much ado about nothing. It may be that nothing comes of it. You know, they go ahead and do abortions anyway. And so, given that it has this one piece in it that I'm very much opposed to, which is to expand the power of the Attorney General, I probably will have to vote against this bill. I mean, I'm a pro-life legislator. I have always been pro-life, anti-abortion. But this bill has this one piece in it that gives me real serious heartburn. So I would like to see the motion that's before us prevail. But, Senator, I'd like to talk to you about that process.
Okay.
That's what's important to me. I predict that later on in the evening, if everybody who wants to talk on this motion sits down and it's about to come up for a vote, I believe that the senator from the 15th, I believe that he'll just withdraw his motion, and that will take the subsidiary motion with it, and we'll adjourn for the night, and then I believe that tomorrow, when that motion comes up again, we'll get back to that motion, the senator from the 15th will offer his motion, and he'll immediately, within 1 second, offer a motion to PQ. And I think that the reason why they're not offering that motion this evening is because they don't have the votes. They don't have the votes to do it tonight, so they have to wait until tomorrow. So they'll make this motion, and somebody from your side of the aisle will stand up and say, oh, we have this alternate motion. And, you know, there's only a few things that fall in front of the PQ motion. Motion to adjourn, motion and the various things. And so you'll never get the opportunity to vote on the motion that's before us. But I want you to think about this. And, you know, you can consider it. Right now, the bill is before us. I mean, you know, he's been recognized for this motion. The moment that he withdraws his motion, couldn't somebody from your side of the aisle immediately, instantaneously offer up the same motion that you offered? I mean, all you have to do is get recognized. He withdraws his motion. Can't the senator from the first pop up and say, I'd like to make this motion? Then it's before us, and they wouldn't have the ability to withdraw it. Now, this is a procedural question that I think is very important for you, your side, and for me to think about, because I prefer the motion before us. Well, and the reason that I do is this piece about the AG. I think it's horrible.
It is.
Policy.
It's terrible.
I agree with the senator from Clay.
Terrible public policy.
So as far as procedurally goes, you know, as soon as this thing is ready to be voted on, I think the senator from the 15th pops up, withdraws his motion, And if somebody else isn't ready to make the motion that the senator from the first has before us, then I think that tomorrow it'll just be a matter of bring it up, PQ it, done. And you'll never get a chance, and I'll never get a chance to vote on that motion.
Three, Senator Standing, Senator from the Fifth, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I notice the absence of a quorum.
An absence of quorum has been noted. Sergeant of Arms, please summon the senators to the chamber. A quorum being established, Senator, you may proceed with your debate. Senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th, you need to be ready to continue with your debate.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I'm trying to ascertain, rather, the sponsor of the... Because I think the handler of the bill can lay the bill over at any point in time. So anytime a third, he can, doesn't matter what we're engaged in or what motion we're on, he can stand up and say, Mr. President, please lay that bill on the formal calendar, and it goes on the formal calendar.
Did we bring the bill before the body?
Yes.
Okay, so the bill is before the body.
The bill is in the body's possession, but the handler of the bill can put it on, place it on the formal calendar at any point in time.
Okay. Well, he made a privileged motion. I mean, he was recognized for a privileged motion. I don't know that you bring the bill before the body in that case, do you?
Yeah, I think he can send his motion back, the underlying motion. But, I mean,
if the bill is before the body, I mean...
Yeah, but the legislation itself is in possession of the handler. So he can send it to the informal calendar.
So we're not going to get an opportunity to vote.
Well,
on the
unless
motion.
We negotiate with the handler to say, don't, you know, let the Senate have a chance to fight for its position. And well, I think that if the handler of the bill, you don't risk losing anything, because if you go to conference, first off, you know you have the votes on the conference committee report to make, or the conference committee to make it look like you want it to look. And then if it comes back and you're going to PQ it, you can PQ it anyways. So other than time, you're really not risking anything. Now, I understand there are some impatient people that want to try to get this done, but you don't make public policy this way. It is bad form to rush something that's going to last out long after you're gone.
Well, you know, if we were to pass the motion before us, it isn't the case that we couldn't get something out of
this. Here's the thing. I don't know that we would have the votes necessarily to pass the motion from the first. But if we had a motion to send it to conference, we might be able to get the votes on that.
You think?
I think we'd have a better chance.
Do you have any reason for thinking that?
Well, if the Senate leadership is going to keep their word to the senator from the 24th, then I would like to believe that their votes would be in play for that motion.
Well, do you agree then that the agreement was that the opposition would sit down if the negotiation, the result of the negotiation?
Yes, that was clear to the agreement. But like the senator from Cole said, he cannot control the House, you know, what they send back. Now, the fact that the governor got involved in making the House bill look like it did and then changes his call to make it look like that should have been enough for us just to come in here, sign-y-die, and say, see you in January. If I was leader of the Senate, that's what I would be advocating for, is that we would come in, we would sign-y-die, and say, see you in January, we'll start over then.
Well, I agree with that. It seems to me that even if we pass the motion of the senator from the first, the House could pick it up and pass it.
They could. They
could. It's not like we're just saying, but you don't get anything.
But the majority leader has indicated that that would leave them in a position of getting nothing, which means that you probably don't have his vote to do that. But when I said, are you willing to go to conference, and he said, that's not the motion that we're on, I see that as a crack in the door to offer a motion to go to conference, and then let's take our chances between the two positions to see if we can't, if we're going to get PQ'd and this bill as is going to go through, then why not see if we can't let cooler heads prevail and negotiators come to some sort of agreement on at least the Attorney General stuff? I mean, we can at least fix that.
I want to make it clear to everyone listening that I stand with the senator from the 24th on this, and that if this bill is PQ'd, they are PQing me because I want this bill to go to conference.
Well, I think that that's a pretty bold statement, Senator, and if that is true and that is indeed the case, then you will be the first Republican senator to have the previous question moved on them while you were engaged in the opposition to legislation.
Well, I think the senator from Clay feels the same way, if not others.
Well,
I think the
senator from Clay and the senator from the 3rd could make an argument that their opposition to right to work was such that the PQ was moved against Republican wishes in that legislation as well. But that was not a public declarative statement that they made, such as the one you just made.
Well, I fully believe that tomorrow they will have enough people here to PQ this bill, and they will PQ it. And I want to remind you that during the session, I passed out a nice little handwritten sheet, and I said, you know, we shouldn't PQ any bill in a special session that we could have PQ'd now, and that it would be wrong to do that. Remember that?
Yes, Senator.
Well, we could have PQ'd this bill during the regular session, but we didn't. And so, to me, it's just the horrible way of doing business to negotiate and agree to have the Democrats agree to sit down on the basis of that negotiation and then come back with something even more onerous and force it down their throats. It's just wrong.
Well, Senator, it certainly would be a practice and a precedent that would be unbecoming of this chamber.
I want you to know that this doesn't reflect on all of the senators. It only reflects on those who are reneging on their negotiation. And I certainly hope that those who look at this won't see this as reflecting on all of us just because we're Republicans. I mean, I absolutely disagree with this, the way this is going down. But I have to tell you that we've seen in this body that when the PQ comes up, the process can get really mean. We saw this on the last day of session.
Yeah. And we've seen last day fever take hold and people lose their minds.
Right.
Okay. Well, Senator, well, I need someone else to take the floor so I can negotiate an idea that I just had.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you rise?
I would like to inquire of the senator from the 15th.
Senator from the 15th. Senator from the 15th. Senator from the 15th, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 5th?
Yes.
Senator from the 5th, you may proceed.
So, Senator, you have decided to take the House version, correct?
Yes.
And usually when we have changes to our Senate policies or proposals that we send over to the House side, and they send us something different, the handler of the bill usually tells us what's different. And so I didn't hear that today. I didn't hear you telling us the difference between the House version and the Senate version. So if you can articulate that, because I'm sure you know what's in the bill. Mm-hmm. If you can articulate that, I would greatly appreciate it.
Sure,
I mean,
no problem.
We usually get that much out of you guys.
Sure. If you go to page 14 of the bill, you'll see the AG language, which was, we've had a lot of discussion about the AG language being changed. We have, in the House version, we have original concurrent jurisdiction given to the AG language, or to the AG, and in the bill that we passed out of here, it was basically, they had to notify, the AG would have to notify the local prosecutor 10 days prior to them making any kind of motion.
So now we're giving the AG the authority to prosecute as well?
Correct.
And why do we, I mean, what's the logic and the rationale behind that? I mean, why do you feel a need to support such a provision like that?
Yeah, so.
And it wasn't in our language, right? It wasn't our
original. Well, it was in my original bill that I filed, Senate Bill 196 during session, which was voted out of committee. And, you know, we do this in other sections of law, dealing with criminal matter. We do it right to work, grain dealer, hazardous waste, water pollution, grain, gaming, Missouri Health Net fraud. Some of these are criminal matters.
So is this considered a criminal matter?
It's all of Chapter 188 dealing with our abortion laws.
So abortion is a criminal matter?
In some instances.
Why is abortion a criminal matter?
Well, I mean, if we'd have to go through Chapter 188 to see where those provisions might be in the chapter. But it's enforcement of Chapter 188.
Okay, I have to go look at 188. What else? I mean, what else is here?
All right, so then if you go to, I did that one first because we had previous discussions on it. If you go to the first page of the bill, it has a complication plan dealing with RU 486. If you go on page 2, if you have any drug that would need surgical intervention of more than 1%, they have to have a complication plan. In the department, the department would have those regulations.
If you have to have a complication plan?
Correct. So if you have a drug out there that would require surgical intervention of more than 1%, then it would require a complication plan.
So who would approve the complication plan?
It would be the department.
Okay, so now what you're doing now, I thought the doctors or the physicians would do that. I mean, how do we take this to the government approving?
The doctors would come up with a complication plan, but it would have to be approved.
When did the government start approving complication plans? I mean, we're not in the field of medicine here. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. I mean, where did you get that from? It sounds so ridiculous. I mean, now all of a sudden we put more work in the hands of the Department of what?
Department of Health.
Department of Health. I mean, they're already in over their head with a lot of what's going on within the department. And so you're giving them more work that they shouldn't have to do.
Well, I mean,
why is that? I mean, what's the rationale? Is it because the Republicans now control the House and the Senate, and the directors are up under the executive branch, and that they're going to do whatever you guys tell them to do?
Well, I mean, if you have a situation where you have a drug that's requiring the patient to have surgery, wouldn't it make sense to have some kind of plan in place there?
But are they doing that with anything else? Are they doing that? Are they putting plans together for anything else?
Well,
I mean, even when people need medicine for hypertension, when they need medicine for diabetes, do they say, we should put together, or we should have a plan, approve a plan, a complication plan? I mean, why is it that we're just doing this when it comes to individuals wanting to have an abortion? I mean, if you really care about the lives of people, you would do it across the board with people who are ill as well. People are not even sick.
Yeah, I mean, are you aware of other drugs that require surgery, very shortly.
I mean,
after
there could be you can have surgery, a complication where about you have hypertension, or you can have a gallstone. I mean, you could eat too much pork and have a gallstone, and you have to go through surgery. But you're not a senior, for that matter. But you're not saying, oh, we need DHSS to approve the complication plan. Give me a break.
All right, so
doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, are you aware of other drugs that require you to have surgery at 24 hours after taking the drug? If it doesn't, this wouldn't apply.
Say that again?
Are you aware of other drugs that would require you to have surgery 24 hours after taking the drug?
What other drugs? I mean, drugs? I'm sure there are other drugs out there. I'm not going to say they're not out there that would, you know, require you to take medicine or whatnot before you go get surgery.
No. We're talking about a drug that would cause you to need to have surgery because the drug did something to you to require you to have surgery.
And maybe, I'm not sure, it may be something out there.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it may be some drugs out there that may require you. I'm unaware of any.
I'm not saying that there's not none out there, but I'm not aware of any. The next provision is the 72-hour waiting period.
Say that again?
The next provision is the 72-hour waiting period. It requires the doctor to do the informed consent. This is common medical practice out there. I just had surgery a month ago, balloon sinus dilation. I didn't meet with a social worker. I didn't meet with a nurse. I met with the doctor about three or four days, you know, a few days before I had the surgery. So it's common medical practice to be meeting with the doctor prior to surgery.
Okay, so basically the consent procedure, you're talking about the consent procedure?
Yes.
So I guess what you're doing away with qualified professionals? Are you taking that out?
Yeah, it's changing it to referring physician. So it would require the doctor to do it.
So right now, qualified professionals can do it, right?
Correct.
Define qualified professionals.
Well, that's what we're striking out.
I mean, is it defined? I mean, qualified professionals. Do we have a definition of qualified professionals? Because basically what you're saying is that no longer will qualified professionals be able to refer?
We're changing it to referring physician, so the physician would have to do that. And, you know, that's common.
Why can't they do it? I mean, what's the definition? What's the definition of a qualified professional?
I would say that's not common medical practice.
I don't care what's common or what's not common. I'm asking you a question about the definition of a qualified professional.
Yeah, I'm not for sure if that's defined in here already. I'm guessing it's not.
Is it defined? Because it's already in language.
I don't know if it is or not.
Defined. But why are you taking it out if you don't know what you're taking out?
Well, because I think making it the physician is something that makes sense. You know, every person that I know have had a surgery, unless it was an emergency situation, but it's something they planned for. They met with the doctor prior to having the surgery. You know, like I said, when I had my wisdom teeth.
So if I'm a counselor, mm-hmm. and I've been counseling for 15 or 20 years, okay. And I counsel for everything from if a woman's deciding to get an abortion or if a woman's depressed or if a man is going through a divorce. I mean, I'm a professional qualified professional. So what you're telling me is that they shouldn't be able to.
I think it makes sense to have the doctor do it. I mean,
why can't both?
I think it makes sense to have the doctor do it. That's what
I mean, and I don't disagree with you, though. I'm with you on that. I think that's good. But why can't you do both? What's wrong with allowing both?
Well, I mean, it doesn't say a nurse or someone else can't be involved. It's just the doctor has to do it at some point in time.
But you're taking out qualified professionals.
Correct.
And if, I don't know if you're not saying a nurse can't do it, because I don't know the definition, and you don't know the definition of qualified professional.
All this is saying is the physician has to do it.
All I'm saying is that's wrong.
All right.
Okay? It's not right.
We can disagree. I think it makes sense to have the doctor do it. You know,
I think it makes sense to have the doctor as well as qualified professionals do it. I don't know what your underlying, I don't know what your motive is behind stripping out. Maybe I do know what the motive is. It's probably attacking Planned Parenthood right here. But that's okay. I can guarantee you that this bill will not see the light of day. I'm a firm believer in that. I'm a firm believer that this will go to court, okay, and I'm sure that this will be taken to court, and that you, again, will continue to be one that wastes taxpayers' dollars. Wasteful Republicans. And that's what I'm going to start calling from this day on. However, tell me what's in the bill. Okay, you have that. You have
all right, qualified. Yeah, so we have the informed consent. Then the next piece would be dealing with the pathologist. Which is on page 12.
Is that dealing with tissues?
Yes.
What's the changes there?
So what we did in the House, or what we did in the Senate, is we changed it to 5 days on line two there, because before it was 72 hours. The House in committee changed it to 72 hours, but then on the House floor they changed it back to 5 days. How it was voted out of the Senate.
So they're taking...
So they changed it and then changed it back to the way we had it.
Okay. And 70... So it's right now it's five business days. It's back to 5 business days?
Let's see. I don't think it says business. I think it's just 5 days.
Okay, so no.
Because I'm reading the amendment.
Okay,
here.
So no. So they changed it. We had 5 business days.
All right, so.
They had 5 days.
All right, so it was 72 hours, then it got changed to five. Then we changed, we had it 5 business days. They changed, the House committee changed it to 72 hours, and then on the House floor they put in 5 days.
So they did change it, cause, so it can be, it doesn't have to be 5 business days.
Correct.
So 5 business days would do what with the tissues?
It would, the time that it would have to be submitted to a certified pathologist.
Okay. So currently, what's in law current? What's the current law?
Current law just says tissue removed at the time of the abortion shall be submitted to a board eligible or certified pathologist. It doesn't say a time frame.
So it said, basically it's saying that it shall be, though. So you have to submit it, but it doesn't give a particular time.
Correct.
Why do we need a particular time? I mean, if it's 4 days, if it's 5 days, if it's 10 days,
well, yeah,
they still have to do it. So why are we like putting a time frame on it? Because they still shall. They is not may here. They still, by law, they're still required to submit the tissues, right? So why are you rushing this deal here?
Well, I think there were several reports with the Department of Health that showed that there was no products of conception. In the pathology reports, which could be problematic in the sense that maybe they didn't get everything when they were doing the surgery, or maybe they didn't do a microscopic view of it, so they didn't know what was in it. And if part of it was left in let's say the mother, then that mother could be at risk. So it's a health risk.
Okay. What's next?
I think a lot of almost everything else in here was already in our bill.
So what about the
we have the abortion.
Well, you have the whistleblowers, right? I mean, I heard about, so what were you changing with the whistleblowers?
I don't think anything was changed with the whistleblower.
Huh?
I don't think anything was changed with the whistleblower language.
Oh, okay.
That was in what we passed out of here, out of the Senate.
Okay, so you basically explained
the difference in the bill. And I just want to, you know, say thank you for that, because, I mean, when I got here, again, we usually go over.
Oh, yeah, I have no problem. I'm always happy to explain things.
Yeah. And so right now, so you're not willing to take this to conference?
No, I'm not. I do not plan on doing that.
Okay. So I guess this is going to be a PQ. This is going to be a battle to the end, I guess, huh?
We'll see what happens. I think I will probably plan on being finished right now. Mr. President? Oh, all right. I was going to...
I'm inquiring of you, young man. I mean, Senator? So, Senator, will the motion on the table right now, will you be willing to allow that motion to pass?
Well, I mean, we can see where the body is on it. I mean...
We can take it to the vote?
Yeah, I mean, we can take it to a vote. We'll see.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. You know, that's fair enough. Okay, thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to withdraw my motion.
Your motion will be sent back, will be withdrawn. That bill will be placed back on the calendar. It will be placed back on the calendar. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. 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 Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned until noon on Tuesday, July 25th.
Senator from Cole moves the Senate stand adjourned until noon on Tuesday, July the 25th, 2017. All those in favor of that motion, say aye. Those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will be adjourned till noon on Tuesday, July the 25th, 2017.